Rules are you press the button, okay, and it turns red and they can record it. We bring you love, Sister Rebecca and I, from the brethren at New Brunswick, especially the little class that met on Wednesday night at the home of one of the brethren, the Austria family, at which some brethren from another ecclesia, the Chaloux, came down. They come with us on Wednesday nights. We bring you love from Jonathan and Becky, our son and daughter-in-law, and also from Jordan and Bethany, with whom we spoke, Jordan, two nights ago. We also are mindful of the love that was sent to us from Siberia during the memorial season, and to the brethren here. We spoke with Brother Alan Springer and some of the brethren in Siberia at that time. They wanted their love conveyed. I don't know if it's been brought to you, so you have it now. And also from Brother Angele Bida in Ukraine, where the brethren are going through some unique trials and struggles as well. They send love. And also from the Harsha family, some of you may have met Brother Nohan. He was at the prememorial convention a few years ago from Australia. He is the brother-in-law to Brother Varma. He is an individual with his wife, Sister Ranjini, who are very, very sound in the truth and very faithful to the teachings of the Harvest Message. We bring you their love as well from Australia. We were speaking with them for many hours these last few weeks. Our fourth enemy, does it still exist? And this is a 2005 update. We spoke on this in 2000, the year Y2K, and it is a very unique subject, because if you'll find yourselves in the sixth volume in the chapter called The Foes and Besetments of the New Creation, you will go through the adversary, the flesh, the world, and then you come to this little last section with its own private subhead that says, the nominal church, an adversary to the new creation. Now, I know brethren don't necessarily have exactly the same views on the subject of what is left of the nominal church in terms of churchianity, Christianity, the terror field, Babylon, and I realize that that's, you know, a question of concern between us, and I would hope that as we go through this, we can review at least what Brother Russell said on the subject and our particular understanding of what he meant when he made those statements, and perhaps it will be no news to you, but perhaps from a different perspective than you may have considered. Our real concern here is several-fold. One is that in spite of all the things that we know and learn, everything that we know and learn, if our hearts are not right, it isn't going to be worth anything. We have fellowship with a sister who's 99 and a half years old. We study with her. We're studying currently Tabernacle Shadows. She frequently bemoans the fact that others are doing so much and she can do so little. And we tell her, what does the scripture say? My son, give me thine heart. So in spite of whatever we know, we really have to get our hearts right. Very critical. And yet that's not the main point of our discussion today. You'll be able to follow along some of the quotes on the handout. And I think if I would have had some more time and directiveness, I might have added more to the handout. But as it is, I put things on and took them off and so forth. So what is the fourth enemy? Yes, it's the nominal church, and it's found where we set it. And we're going to read this portion on the handout, the first number one portion, where you'll see it saying the following. There is a continual temptation to the new creation by the nominal church system, not only through false doctrines, but also in formalistic piety and hypocrisy. Now, we could say, well, that's finished. All right, you could say that. But all I would say in general, again, into the issue of whether or not this is something that's upon us, have we seen any of our brethren stumble by the teachings of the nominal church, let's say in the last year, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years? I think we have. I think some of them have fallen away because of the teachings of this false system. Or for various reasons, maybe even formalistic piety, whatever that might mean to you or to Brother Russell at the time he wrote it. It says also the temptations to the new creation from the world would be comparatively powerless were it not for the fact that the nominal church combines the worldly spirit, aims, ambitions with the name of Christ and humble service to him. Now, again, I recognize the time Brother Russell wrote this. But notice the last portion of this is underlined on your paper. No others of the adversary's snares are so alluring, so deceptive, so powerful as this one. Frankly, brethren, I believe that that system is still around, is still kicking, and unfortunately kicking out a lot of bad words for people to swallow down. And as you'll see through this whole discussion, there's more coming. None so powerful. Why is it so? The nominal church essentially supplanted the true church of Christ and misrepresented God and Christ, as well as the teachings of the 12 apostles. It discouraged, it created blinding effects on individuals. You know, we know that the Mass isn't anything real. There's no real blood that's going to be imbibed, or real flesh. But think of what it does to someone who's a Christian. They believe that that's what it is. And as a result, anyone who wouldn't believe that way, or anyone who would believe correctly, would have been persecuted, harmed, throughout the 2,000-year period. Well, almost, you know, not that long. What did it result in? It resulted in discouragement. It resulted in persecution. It resulted in dwarfism, carnality. It resulted in wickedness and worldliness of all kinds. The system is evil. The results of the enemy's tear-sowing have been to produce monstrous, hybrid Christian lookalikes called tares. I would suggest also that we would ask the question, why would Brother Bob want to bother us with this? We are generations into the harvest period. In fact, some of you may know third-generation Bible students or fourth generation. Think about it. Do you know any fifth-generation Bible students? I counted one individual who consecrated and was immersed last year as a sixth generation from the time her great-great-great-grandfather was a Bible student in Brother Russell's day. Anyway, that's a long time back. So why now do we concern ourselves with any danger, fear, anything from this system, whatever we want to call it? Well, first of all, I don't believe it's collapsed. And you'll see on the handout, it's number 2A. I'd like to read that with you. The collapse will be sudden and awful when it does come. And while only the few realize the fallen from grace condition of Babylon, I would date that as 1878, in the present, none will be ignorant of her collapse when it comes. That's a very interesting statement, because if some of us believe that it is gone and it is collapsed, this is a very strange statement, because Brother Russell is saying none will be able, in other words, to say that it didn't happen. None will be ignorant of its collapse when it comes. So we see this as yet future, from his perspective, at least. What did he expect? We continue with the reading from reprint 2554. He said, "We are looking yearly for its final knot to be tied in some manner that will include with other Protestant denominations the Episcopal Church and a working agreement with papacy. Thus the image of the beast will receive life, vigor, energy, and be made active. An activity which will seem to promise great things for quote-unquote Babylon," that's my quotes, "and which will actively suppress liberty and be exerted powerfully against the spread of the truths now published by us." Well, his truths, his writings are still being published. They haven't been abruptly stopped. And we realize that we're very thankful for that. One of the sisters is working on different segments now that 24 different types of translations of the first volume will appear on a website. They're not all done yet, but they're in process. I forget how many, but probably more than half are already accessible around the world for people to read of volume one. Go ahead to handout number 2C. I will not try to read the whole thing, but you'll notice it says he's suggesting there will be a great triumph of churchianity. Notice the word churchianity. After the war, both Catholics and Protestants and so forth will share in this triumph. I know that some have suggested that this may be what happened during World War II between either Mussolini and the Vatican, or between Hitler and the Vatican. But frankly speaking, Brother Russell did look for the Anglican Church to be involved. And the Anglican Church was not involved in that combination or activity with Hitler. So I don't think that fulfilled it in any sense of the word. And notice in this little quotation that you'll find on your paper that Brother Russell did expect serious persecution for the church. And notice that he wrote this at a time in 1916 when he had the ability to look back over a period of time, see what was happening. And notice this, the sentence that is concluding this, which is underlined on your paper. But the triumph of Churchianity, of Babylon, will be short. Soon the sentence already pronounced will be executed, and she shall fall like a great millstone into the sea, into anarchy and destruction, never to rise again. Now, again, please understand, I realize that some perceive that the stone was down before, and it's going down with deliberation through the sea. Brother Russell in 1916 is talking about a future. Keep in mind what Brother Russell said, and keep in mind what we've been seeing since his day. I call to mind some, I don't know if any of you have ever seen these graphics, but there was a very famous cartoonist, political cartoonist in the 1800s named Thomas Nast. I really would like to curiously know, how many of you have ever heard of Thomas Nast? Okay, very, very clever man. He gave us Santa Claus that we know and see pictures of. He gave us the elephant and the donkey for Republicans and Democrats. But he also drew vicious anti-Catholic cartoons. And that was acceptable in those days. And here Brother Russell at the same time is saying, oh, the churches are going to get together, the Protestants. And people must have thought he was beside himself, that that could ever happen. And what have we seen in the last 100 years or so? This coming together of these people. Remarkable. However we want to perceive it, that's what he was saying at the time. Now, we do want to know our enemy. And they say, if you know your enemy, you can deal with things in a better way. And we could go through the history of the satanic creation, and we probably will cover some of it as we try to go through it today. But we want to also look at the present status, what's going on over there in the Vatican, briefly. And then, really, we want to see, is there any possible sanctifying effect that we could get by understanding what is going on between these people who, if nothing else, claim to be Christian. Well, let's put it in that broad sense. And what they may try to do claiming to be Christian. I'll give you a little parenthetical statement here. Sister Rebecca is probably hoping I wouldn't do this, but I do parenthetical things and wipe out with no time. But it's an important thing. I worked with a man who studied witchcraft for a master's degree. He wasn't a witch. I said to him, what do you think about those people? He says, it doesn't matter what you think about them. The fact that they believe that they are is bad enough. Because they will do things that are wicked, whether they are or not able to really do them. So if you get a system of people who think they're God's gift to the world, whether they are authentic or unauthentic, they're potentially a danger to anybody who comes in harm's way. We'll talk more about that. Has Babylon ever been beneficial to any of the Lord's people ever? You know, we speak about the ancient Babylon being a golden cup in the hand of the Lord. Lord's hand in Jeremiah 51:7. But you know, antitypical Babylon was a virgin before it became the harlot system. And she kind of abandoned that betrothal status, lost her virginity, became involved with the kings of the earth, committing what you'd call political spiritual fornication. And into her cup, so to speak, she, instead of having the sacrifices which she should have been, the cup which she should have been able to drink as a pure virgin, she became filled with doctrines that are abominable, noxious, intoxicating, as the scriptures suggest, and made the nations drunk. It's a dreadful system. Who could possibly be begotten because of such a system? I think we understand, as Brother Russell said in Volume 6, page 654, tares cannot beget wheat, nor can nominal Christendom produce true Christians. That's the fact. Never, ever did the Babylonish system ever produce a true saint. It's because of the scriptures that true saints were able to come into existence. It's in spite of Babylon. Now, those are Brother Russell's words. Tares cannot beget wheat, nor can nominal Christendom produce Christians. 654, volume 6. Saints have been begotten in spite of Babylon through the centuries. Whatever your perception is, what could be happening now, it's always been in spite of. And variously, they were warned to separate, but never have they been forcibly told, you must get out of her, of course, until the harvest time. Brother Russell expressed in 1900 his concern for those who should get out of the system. There is a section in a reprint, page 2553, which is called Federation of Babylon. It's also Fallen from Gate. The title is Fallen from Grace versus Collapsed. It's an interesting article, 2553, 1900 Views from the Towers. Begettal occurs only, past or whenever, because of God's Holy Spirit, the Word of Truth. Of His own will begat He us with the Word of Truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits of His creatures. James 1:18. God's truth begets new creatures, not Babylon. It never did, never will. And truth sanctifies, which of course means, since error does not sanctify, it must do damage. And I think we recognize that. Error prevents sanctification. Every single error. Now you say, wait a minute, Brother Bob, you profess that you have everything straight 100% and that I don't, or I have everything straight and somebody else doesn't? We have different views. How is it possible? Brethren, we need as much truth as possible to be as sanctified as possible. So we strive to try to understand the truth as much as we possibly can. As much as we possibly can. And we trust that the Lord will forgive our own personal failings for not being able to grasp this or that aspect of truth. Perhaps the only redeeming value of this fourth enemy has ever been that it's been used as a testing ground to test the mettle of the saints. Jesus told us how it started with the parable of the sowing of the tares. The Apostle Paul spoke about the mystery of iniquity working. John warned about the Antichrist, which would come in the last time. And it is the last time, he says. Revelation 12:5 talks about the man-child. And by the way, if you have not recently read the picture of the counterfeit of God's kingdom on reprint page 306, very early reprint, but it's Brother Russell's thoughts on Revelation 12. I recommend it. Why? Because there are brethren and there are others floating around who are sending different ideas and different signals about what Revelation 12 says and how it should be understood. Please read that. Okay, during the third stage of the church and during Thyatira and during Sardis, there are all sorts of evils that are worked in this system. Those that held the doctrine of Balaam, thou sufferest Jezebel to teach. I have a few names which have not been defiling their garments. These are the language of Revelation describing the growth of the church. But you see, the fourth enemy has not only taught doctrines that are evil, but it has gone out and applied in its behavior the doctrines of evil. And some of this even spilled over, of course, into modern times with things such as the Holocaust. Because when Hitler went out, as mentioned by Brother Jim, this Holocaust period he referred to, and I've kind of touched on it slightly, the people who suffered at the hands of what Jonathan Goldhagen, who's a secular writer, I must admit, he says, Hitler's willing executioners. Why were they willing executioners? Because the doctrines of their churches taught that Jews had killed God, which is wrong, because God was not Jesus. That's not beside the point. But the fact is that this is what the doctrines of the church were able to teach. And the evil that came out of that system was still evident in the behavior of those individuals. I'd like you to look at handout number 3. There's a very interesting point that I'd just like to touch on here. In the first column of section number 3 there, it mentions the final extinction of the hierarchy, and I inserted Papacy Babylon near the close of the day of wrath and judgment already begun, which will close by the times of the as shown by the times of the Gentiles with the year 1914. Now, you can read this carefully. But the point being, he also said, look across to the second column, whether the date 1914, so clearly marked in the Bible as the end of the lease of power, would mean, therefore, would mean a fully out of power, or whether it's the lease expiring, their eviction beginning, the latter we begin to be the Lord, perceive to be the Lord's program. But what are we saying? We're saying that Brother Russell teaches us that when we communicate with the Christian world or anybody out there, we should keep things in context. And we should take the whole counsel of God's Word. Well, sometimes we have to remind ourselves to take the whole counsel of Brother Russell's ministry. I mean, he did write things that give different perspectives, such as the forewords, which include the comments we have been making. Sometimes brethren perceive Brother Russell's comments as for things continuing into the future as speculation. But we don't think it's speculation. If anything, we think Brother Russell might have speculated and said, well, it really did wrap up, everything's done and gone, and it's finished. You know, others did that, and they said that the high calling is closed and so forth, and they went really wrong. We continue with the very last comment on that page at the bottom, where it says that Brother Russell thought whether this age ends in October 1914 or a century later, our faith will be equally clear. And that's reprint on the page you have at 4530. Kind of remember that he was looking for ways of understanding how the Lord was going to handle things, and he even extended things that far, which I think is quite remarkable. Brother Russell expected, as he said on Volume 2, page 361, he expected new combinations, a simple law of religion, even in this land, personal liberty being curtailed. Well, we really haven't seen that. But, you know, our society, since 9/11, has been very psyched for allowing the government to do whatever they have to do to keep some proper sanity and order in society. And I'm not saying that that's automatically the answer to this question that Brother Russell's raising, but I do believe that things are moving in that direction. And we'll talk about that also a little bit more. Now, there's another era aspect of this. Brother Russell spoke about the future persecution, or should I say the persecution methods of his time, as being perhaps more refined, that people would be more roasted, as people ridicule people, in that sense of the word roasted, not in a literal sense. But, you know, Brother Russell wrote at a time during the Victorian era in which he was not aware of what would be coming in the Holocaust. He was not aware even what was happening, I believe, to the Native Americans, the American Indian. He was not even aware, I think, of what happened during the... And this was written right after the Philippine activity in the Spanish-American War. I don't think he even knew the tortures that were used by military people when they dealt with what are called insurrectos, the Filipinos, who were resisting America's control there. Whatever it was, I don't think he was comprehending that, and I don't think he had access to that information. In any case, you know, Brother Russell did make this comment that I'm going to read, and that's in volume, it's on the second side, number 4. For a time, the wheels of liberty and progress will be turned backward, and medieval restraints will be considered necessary for self-preservation, for the maintenance of the present order of things, and for the prevention of the new order which God has decreed. Now, however we want to read that, medieval restraints sound pretty terrible. He was expecting some heavy-handed operations by people who at least would be claiming to try to put together church and maybe state together, knowing full well that it would not be like the earlier years of the Dark Ages, but definitely be something of that nature of behavior, that he could use the words medieval restraints. You know, medieval restraints. Brother Russell, in, I think it's volume 2, referred to Napoleon's battle-hardened soldiers going into the monasteries and finding these torture devices. And they were shocked. Now, that's what I associate with the expression medieval restraints. I don't know what you might perceive. You know, I think we want to recognize that whatever does happen in the near future or in the distant future, we're not setting any time limits. You and I both know we have this very moment of time only, and maybe the next few. We don't know what's going to happen when we step out the door or go somewhere tonight or tomorrow. We have no clue. We can't set, this is how far I'm going to go or that. We don't do that. If anything, we keep it in terms of the, if the Lord permits. But if we're energetically taking the advantages we have of the knowledge of truth, you have a book table which is loaded. You have opportunities tonight to participate in a public witness, which Brother Todd will present. These are the things we should be doing with our lives, focusing on those who are out there, but with some hunger in their hearts for truth. Whatever we want to call them, they are out there looking, and they keep looking and writing questions. The brethren in Central Ohio are getting how many responses now per month, Sister Lynn? Guess. Is it close to 2,000 now? Okay. Okay, that's all right. No problem. But they're getting hundreds and hundreds of responses a week, if nothing else. Let's put it that way. Okay? I know that much is true. And they're writing questions, too. They have good questions. Some of the websites get questions that sound like somebody's doing their homework. But they're asking good questions. So are we studying daily? Are we meditating on it? Are we sharing that with others? Even in our own household, are we praying continually? Are we watching sensitively for the Lord's providences? Do we have that love for our brethren that allows us to talk to them freely about the things that are dear to our hearts? And are we prepared to meet with them and share with them in the labors of this age? Are we witnessing whatever we can by character, as was mentioned? You know, someone would rather see a sermon than to hear one. But still, Brother Todd said that. But still, in spite of that, there is truth that needs to be learned and adapted into our lives. And you know, truth is what sanctifies. If we don't put the truth in and ruminate on it and have that crunched around in our brains, there's nothing going to happen with our brains. I mean, we just turn on the TV and follow what's going on in the world? For what? It's just too distracting to the Christian mind, to the saintly mind. Are we keeping our robes unspotted, cleansing ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit? Those aren't my words. 2 Corinthians 7:1. Apostle Paul said that to the church. Are we doing the same thing, cleansing ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit? We have an advocate. We must go to him. If we find ourselves spotted or wrinkled or whatever, we need to communicate. He ever lives to make intercession for us. If you're taking notes, it's James 1:27, 2 Corinthians 7:1, 1 John 2:1, and Hebrews 7:25. Brethren, there's so much that we have to do. And on top of Satan and on top of the world and on top of our flesh, we've got this system that's pumping out error, which would try to deceive us. And we say, well, we can't be deceived. But brethren have been deceived. Brethren have been deceived. And I can go into more of that on a personal discussion if you want. Babylon has been Satan's tool for centuries. And hopefully, we will never be deceived. Let's see. Recently, they selected a new pope, right? Benedict XVI. The fellow said he prayed to God they wouldn't select him. Seems a little disingenuous, but maybe he did. Maybe he did. Maybe he felt it would be too much for him to take that on. I don't know. Seems like he's been working hard to get there. He's called a hardliner, and yet he says he wants to be a reconciler. It is the first time that an Anglican archbishop was invited. You'll see that at the bottom of your page. Archbishop Canterbury was invited. He pushes for the ecumenical tradition. Something's going on out there that wasn't going on in Brother Russell's day, but it's in the direction that he expected it to go. Just think of it that way. It's in the direction he expected it to go. The time is not what he expected, but the direction is the same. You know, Time magazine had an article on Mary. I perceive Brother Todd has read that. Has he?
Yeah,
thought so. Some of the language that we find in there talks about Protestants bringing with them from their Catholic background into the Pentecostal tradition and to the Protestant tradition very great feelings towards Mary. Some Protestants are very pleased with this, others are a little upset, but the bottom line is that while that's interesting and is very peculiar, it's not my main concern. My main concern lies with a group of conservative Presbyterians. These folks have managed to pull together a conglomeration of followers and supporters who are very interested in something called what I would call dominionism. And they call it that also. For example, they believe that Christ left the world with the responsibility in the hands of the Christians to have a Christian world. They would be called, in old days, post-millennialists. They will take care of the world for Christ, and when he comes, they'll have subdued the world, and they will control it with Christian government. Notice I didn't say church-state. They say they want Christians in every level of government. This is very strange. They have prepared a document, which somehow has managed to elude me as to where it is. I thought I brought one up here with me. But it is called the 42 points. Excuse me, 42 articles of the essentials of a Christian worldview. Articles of affirmation and denial. These folks are claiming to have pulled together the following groups of people: Anabaptists, Arminians, which is like Methodists or Church of the Nazarene, Lutherans, Calvinists, and Wesleyans. They pulled them together and they produced 42 items which are not exactly the same in any way, but similar to the concept that was in the articles that were drawn up in 1846 in the Evangelical Alliance. Why am I mentioning this? Very simply, these folks believe that they should dominate the world for Christ. And as I said before, you know, they may not have any authority to do this, but they're going to try. And they've been basically trying to get Christians into all aspects and all levels of government in America. And you know, I think they've been succeeding. I think that they've got people in at local levels and at moderate and medium levels and at state levels and legislatures and all the way up. And they're going to try to implement their ideas of what law should be, which they call theonomy. Theonomy. And they want to impose biblical law in our society and then around the world. Because after all, Christ said, to occupy till I return. And that's their concept. Again, who knows where this is going to go? I'm just watching. I'm concerned that we might not watch and notice and somehow even become unwittingly cooperating with such a group of people. Because after all, who does agree with some of the evils that are going on? And they keep knocking the evils. And you say, yeah, that's right, that's right. But their motivation is not the same as what just a secular person in government might be who wants to clean up society. They have a goal. It's a very strange goal. So we say we see a drop in church attendance. Do we really? Why are they building 10,000 seat churches if we see a drop in church attendance? Is the Catholic Church failing? Yeah. But how many popes have had world leaders rush to their side for the little photo op? You've seen various leaders do that. The present president, the previous president, and all the ones before him. There's something about that man with that hat and all that other stuff that he carries around with him Brother Jim said, a billion adherents to that faith? That carries a lot of weight in some people's minds. So it goes that route. You know, we could go through different aspects, like the discussions of Revelation 17 and so forth, which we won't do. And on the back, you'll see that there's been some activity. And these go back to 1999 and year 2000. The Day of Pardon, which you can read on your own. The Joint Declaration on Justification by Lutherans. I wonder if Luther would have approved of this one. And the Gift of Authority, which seems to agree that the Church's should have some respect for the primacy of the Bishop of Rome. Just look at it when you have a chance. Again, my main concern is for us and how we perceive what's going on. Even the Orthodox Church, the Russian Orthodox Church, has sometimes seemingly come on board. Although back in 2002, when we were traveling to Russia, there was a very interesting phenomenon. We found out that the authorities were abusing some of the Catholic priests who were trying to work out their activities in a, quote, Russian Orthodox country. They were not appreciated. Some of them were sent back to Poland. One of them was sent back to Poland, I should say. One of them had his passport poked a hole through it and thrown in the trash by some, because they found out he was Catholic and not Orthodox. It's a strange behavior against the man of the cloth. But nevertheless, there's some feelings underground that the Catholics aren't appreciated in an Orthodox country, if you haven't noticed that before. What other areas should be considered here? If there is a time when there will be a revival of this image, as Brother Russell expected, and it hasn't happened yet, then they will try to proscribe us from doing things and prescribe what we must do. They may say you can't meet in such a location, you are not registered, or whatever it might be. A while back in Moldova, the priest in town told the mayor, those Bible students are not good people. You should not let them use the public school to meet in. That was the end of the meeting at the public school. In Ukraine, the brethren used to meet in a school building. A law has been passed that has said, and I just found this out 3 or 4 days ago, a law has been passed that says you must not allow this religious group to meet in a place where students attend. Why, I don't know, but they no longer have access to that building. They are now meeting in private homes, which is not a big problem, unless it gets worse. Is there some activity going on? I have a couple of websites that say this business about Christian Reconstructionism. I didn't print it on the handout because I frankly don't think it's for everybody. But one is called forerunner.com. forerunner.com /revolution/questions.html for those of you who know what that means. But forerunner.com will get you, I think, there. HTTP with no W's. Why am I mentioning this? Because it's really interesting to hear these people from their perspective say things like this. You know, the early Christians got it right. If by accident, they just fell into it. Pretty soon, Constantine was telling the church bishops that they should wear the garb of a Roman magistrate so people would have respect for Roman law because the church people are wearing the robes. Or Calvin's Geneva had it right when he had Michael Servetus executed. He didn't believe everything we believe, of course, but he didn't believe in the Trinity, and that was a biggie to them. They also commend places like Puritan New England. We know it was good for things like witchcraft, hunts, and things like that. There are people out there who don't want people like the Reconstructionists to come to power because they don't want to see people proscribed from being or living as homosexuals. They don't want people to be proscribed from having abortions. And if somebody would say to us, well, do you approve of that? And we would say, no, of course not. Well, then you're on our side. Well, wait a minute. Yes, we are, but you mean to say you want to publicly execute somebody for that? We understand that in the kingdom, the Lord, if people refuse to obey after this time of growth in the kingdom, if they refuse, they will be taken off the scene. But these folks want to do it now because that's the way it should be done. Occupy till I return. It's an interesting perspective. But I believe that this enemy will be an enemy of the true church until the true church is gone from the scene, and that would also include the Great Company's course as well. Not until Jezebel is literally thrown down from her window. And by the way, Brother Russell, remember, said, none will be ignorant of her collapse when it comes. I perceive that millstone yet is to be cast future in the final sense into the sea. So, is it still around? I think the answer is clearly yes. And what we need to do is ask ourselves, what is our responsibility with respect to such matters? We look at the press and we say, you know, In fact, this is a danger point for us. I think I could fall into this trap maybe more readily than others because my career involved teaching social science. And as a social science teacher, I was forever reviewing exactly what government leaders were doing in all different periods of history. And some of it is pretty scary, and some of it is pretty rotten. And the things that were done in the name of the United States with our tax dollars are just horrendous. I like to think of my tax dollars building the highway between my house and Detroit. That's what I like to think of it as, not as spending money on napalm and things like that to fry people. But, you know, you can get to a point where you become caustic and you can become rude. In fact, you could actually become to the point where you're ready to verbally defame someone who's a leader. And, you know, that's not appropriate. Brother Russell comments on that, and I didn't include this in your handout, but you might want to look at it. It's reprint 2947. And in that article, which is called Persecution Rightly Received, and it has to do with one of the articles on Acts, where Brother Russell treats how the brethren took persecution in their time. In summary statement of this, he said, well, there should be a caution of speaking out against those who rule over us. And I'll give you some details on that. But he also said, we have to respect the higher law, God's law. Now, let's take a look at some of the quotations that we've highlighted for ourselves. His people, the Lord's people, should be subject to the powers that be, and they should not speak evil of the rulers of their people. Okay, we agree with that. But, you know, I've heard brethren making comments that are very hilarious about some of the leaders, and I think they're right. Now, how do you avoid getting into that spirit? Well, you have to be careful. We cannot ever permit civil law, or if ever it happens, religious imposition of law, to hinder our obedience to God. That has to be a must in our mind. And that may be a costly must. But try to remember this. When they said in the old days, we're talking about in the early centuries, that we're going to worship Christ and have Easter on such a day, and we're not going to have any of these memorial suppers on the proper day that you're observing anymore. Brethren who did observe the correct date for the memorial were persecuted. Persecuted. Because church and state were at that time in cahoots. So it should be with us today to be strict law-abiding citizens, not speaking evil of governments or its servants. And if God sees fit to permit them, he said that's reason enough for us to be subject to them. But let's remember, you know, we are past the days of the Gentile times. I mean, that's a fact. At least I perceive so. But, you know, he said even the poorest government is supposed to be better, it's in the same article, than no government. In other words, anarchy. And I think we have to recognize that, too, also. You know, we look around us and say that this world is filled with anarchy. And every time I see somebody cutting somebody off and going on the right side of the shoulder to pass them, I say, that's anarchistic behavior. But that's not anarchy. Anarchy would mean you'd not be sitting here today. You'd not have food, possibly. You'd not have water. Things would be going crazy. You would not want to walk on the streets like they did in Sarajevo for fear of being shot by a sniper, because there's no law. People do whatever they want. But it never should hinder us from defending the truth, whatever the laws might be, and its interests, wherever they are assailed. I mentioned about the world leaders. The Orthodox have made their point clear. They want to be included in meetings that affect Jerusalem. The Roman Catholics want to be involved in what affects Jerusalem. The world, Russia just went down to Egypt to try to establish something government to government about this. But the religious leaders are going involving themselves. Arafat went to see the Pope. Israeli leaders go to see the Pope. And we mentioned the others as well. So it's really quite amazing how much a non-entity such as the Vatican, as we perceive it in some cases, can have so much influence in this world at this time. And it does. So what's our personal responsibility? Our heart attitude is the most important, we said. You know, dear brethren, even if we have, whether I say myself or whether I say yourself, have the most precise understanding of truth, if our hearts are not pure, or if we allow ourselves to become so overburdened that we just stop cold and refuse to do anything because of the cares of this life, We can fail in spite of what we know. On the other hand, if we don't have an accurate knowledge of everything, and our hearts are pure, the Lord can show us what He needs to show us. And He will show it to us. Keeping our hearts pure is very vital. And I don't say that from the standpoint of Bob Gray has it all figured out, his heart is pure, and he knows the brethren, they're not. I don't mean that at all. If you knew who was behind this mask that's sitting in front of you, you would know that he's worried about his salvation because he's worried about whether his heart is pure, whether he has it all, and whether his faith is strong enough, if he has enough courage to face the things he thinks are going to be in the future. I must tell you, I don't presume to be telling you what you should be doing, but I think we should be telling each other and ourselves how we should be keeping our hearts with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Know the doctrines, share the doctrines, feed the flock, feed the brethren, help one another, lift up the hands of the needy. Peter would have taken a sword and continued chopping away at those people who came to take Jesus. And Jesus said no. And Peter, in spite of his zeal, denied the Lord that night 3 times. We don't want to do that once. But perhaps in our everyday life, we actually do slip sometimes. And we don't carry and follow through where we are denying the Lord by our behavior, our words, our attitudes, our thoughts. So let's just try to be more careful. I'm not suggesting that we're going to be perfect in this. None of us is capable of doing this perfectly. Our intention needs to be perfect. Get that heart focused, that intention right, and all these other things that we talked about today and other things can fall in place when they have to. I believe fully and firmly that whether what I'm saying about this system, the fourth enemy, is correct or not, I fully believe that if the time comes when the brethren see what's happening, as I perceive it may be happening, as I said, it's my watching of it, they will have no problem. They will, their hearts are right, they will have no problem resisting this evil. If it rises, as I think it will, as I think Brother Russell taught it would. I have no problem with that. I love you. I pray for you. The bottom line is that only our love for the Lord, for the truth, and for the brethren will allow us to really be overcomers and faithful to the end. There's going to be a lot of pressures. And when and if things become difficult, the brethren will not have trials on an equal basis. One brother might get applause for what he's saying from people in even, like, for example, we had an incident in our class. One brother was writing a letter. We signed 3 names to it. I was working with Roman Catholics at the time. They may have been very offended by what was in the letter. One brother, his family lived in an environment where his children might have been affected by it, if that name appeared in the paper, which it did. And the other brother who was involved in it, he might have got applause from the community that he was writing focused on. It happened to be about Israel. Interesting. 3 different individuals, 3 different possible results. I could have been in trouble with my faculty. Children could have been picked on. And the other person could have got applause. When the trouble comes to any of us at any time, it's going to be uneven. We have to be careful we don't look at the other one and say, why did you do that? That's putting me at risk. If it's truth, let's stand with the brethren. And you know what an incredible prospect we have before us of being part of the New Jerusalem to replace that evil system which has hurt so many people for so long, that the world has suffered under the hands of those evil teachings. May the Lord bless you, give you grace, courage, strength, and faith. And if you'd like a copy of our last newsletter, I have them up on the deck here. You can just take one. It deals with an update on the same subject.
Brother, I'm sure you've already been saying thank you very much to Brother Bob. for taking a very candid approach to the subject. Is there indeed a fourth enemy that we share? And I think he made his case that it's possibly, very possibly something there. Thinking of almost a conclusion, just a few scriptures that came to mind that I might read for you, and that is, there is a reality, it seems, out there, but Bob brings that reality to the surface, that there's even a possibility of that brethren one day can be brought to even into a position where they might hurt one another in order to be right in the eyes of those who are in positions of authority. And it's a very sobering thing, very sobering idea. And yet, it's something for us to balance. We have to balance it. I know that Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians, the 6th chapter, did tell us and reminded the brethren in Corinth that it was indeed a real thing, that there is a difference, that there always be this difference between truth and error. Verse 14 of chapter 6, 2 Corinthians 6, 14, be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers, for what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? And what concord hath Christ with Belial? For what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God. And as God hath said, I will dwell in them, and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord. Touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. But the Bible wants us to conclude with hymn number 247, again, the last two verses, verses 3 and 4. We'll stand with verse 4, and we are going to...